Welcome in to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Excited about today's program. And I'll start it off by telling you this. You know, there are many areas of the U.S. that claim they have different paranormal phenomena going on in different regions of the U.S. We talk about the southwestern area of the U.S., the New Mexico area, Arizona area. They claim UFOs. You go out east, Pennsylvania areas, to the northeastern areas, they can claim ghost activity. Today, we're going to the West Texas area. And the reason we're doing that is we're going to talk today about the Texas Dogman Triangle. We've got Aaron Deese with us today. And we're going to talk a little bit about the West Texas Dogman. And we'll talk a little bit about Bigfoot as well today. We've got some exciting stuff going on. Aaron is a San Antonio, Texas-based author and researcher and the former editor-in-chief of Paranormality Magazine. When he's not chasing werewolves, he enjoys books, cartoons, video games, podcasting, and nunchucks. And who doesn't? I love all those things as well. Aaron lives with his wife, Sarah, and with whom he hosts the podcast, Hey Strangeness, and his son, Ezra, along the way with Too Many Cats Near the Alamo. Let's welcome into Darkness Radio, Aaron Deese. Aaron, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Tim. Thanks so much for having me. Well, excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you, my friend. First of all, I want to tip my cap to you. I think you're only the second book I've ever read having to do with this type of cryptid that's ever mentioned El Santo in the movies of El Santo. So right off the bat.
Yes. Oh, thank you. I've been like fingers crossed hoping someone would bring that up. Thank you. They're a treat.
I didn't know whether I was going to save it for somewhat into the interview. I figured, I don't know if I was going to geek out right away. I'm going to geek out right away on it. For those in the audience who don't know, El Santo is a lucha libre wrestler who got into the strange and bizarre and decided to make some werewolf movies. So they're entertaining as hell, I'll tell you that. They're very low budget.
So good.
Yeah, very low budget, but very good. Yeah, so I encourage, that's your homework over the weekend. If you've got nothing to do over the Memorial Day weekend, check out an El Santo movie.
Check them out. Maybe El Santo versus the Wolfman. I think that might be relevant.
There you go. Yeah, that is. That's very relevant for the topic we're talking about today. So, Aaron, let's start out slow. Let's start out, first of all, with Paranormality Magazine. We'll go in that direction first. What led to your beginnings in Paranormality Magazine and getting with that establishment?
Yeah, I was just kind of doing my own thing on Instagram. Sarah and I had the Hey Strangeness podcast going. I think we had maybe four episodes at that point, one of which was called the Texas Dogman Triangle. That's where all of this started originally. Mm-hmm. And I was contacted by Cody Turk, who was also with the organization at the time. And he asked me if I wanted to write. I said, yes, I like to write. And after about a year, I assumed the position of editor-in-chief. And that's the whole thing. And I had a great time there. I did a lot of work that I'm very proud of, made a lot of connections, a lot of friends in the community. I'm still friends with all the people I worked with there. So great times. Yeah.
Yeah. It took off quite quickly. I mean, it made quite a name for itself quite quickly. So
It did. Yeah. And there was a bit of controversy a couple months ago that precipitated my leaving and a few other people leaving. I do want to state that in case anyone has concerns about that, I did make the decision to leave, but had some great times there, mm-hmm. You know, awesome publication, a lot of amazing work was done there by our team for sure.
Mm-hmm. And we'll leave that where it is. We're not going to go any further into that, obviously. The book is out now, and I got to tell you, is a very fun read, and it's got some very good stories in it. I enjoyed sitting down and reading it. The Texas Dogman Triangle. Tell me a little bit. Now, you said you and your wife have gotten into the topic even before this book with your podcast, Hey Strangeness. But what is it? Is it being in the area? What is it about this topic that really kind of tickles your fancy?
That was really what started it. Yeah, is being in the area, because we lived in Austin for 9 years, mm-hmm. And we just recently moved back to San Antonio because that's where we're from. And I heard about a sighting, very close to Austin in the Lampasas area. And this was relayed to me by someone that I knew and that I trust implicitly. It's one of the first encounter. I think it's the first encounter detailed in the book. It is. And I started looking at maps, and I looked at the North American Dogman Research Project map, and they had two other sightings adjacent to this one. And when you put them on a map, you get a triangle of about 700 square miles. Wolves will occupy 700 square miles. They'll move around in that amount of space.
Yeah.
So at first my thought is, oh, we've got some wolves in Texas. We're not supposed to have wolves. That's kind of one of the things that keeps coming up, is that there aren't supposed to be wolves here. They were extirpated, you know, in the mid 19th century.
Okay.
So that got me interested. That got me looking. And then we recorded the podcast, kind of left it alone for a little bit. I got a lot of really good feedback on it. 2 years later, it's still our most downloaded episode. And Jeremiah Byron over at Bigfoot. Yeah, it blows my mind, dude. Jeremiah Byron, good friend of mine, amazing guy, over at the Bigfoot Society podcast, was like, you should write a book about this. I was like, okay, maybe. And then Small Town Monsters got involved, and here we are. So,
can I ask you a quick question here, Aaron? Why were wolves extirpated back so long ago from Texas? Because this is why I asked this question. You know, you're familiar with the Beast of Bray Road in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin, by all means, has wolves. We have wolves here in Minnesota. We have timber wolves and different wolves here in Minnesota. So they're, it's not like they're foreign to this area. But mm-hmm. a beast mm-hmm. like the Beast of Bray Road is very much different from what we have in this area. Mm-hmm. So to me, in an area where we have deer, and I take it you have deer in Texas as well.
Quite a lot.
I've done some hunting in my day, and I've done some things in the woods in my day. So to say that if you have an animal that would work somewhat like prey, there's got to be predators out there that would, you know, especially with a bigger animal like that, that would use that mm-hmm. animal as prey. Now, mm-hmm. it would seem to me that eventually, even if you weed out, I'll give you a good example. The Minnesota Timberwolf, not the NBA player, because surely they're prey as well. But a little bit of an NBA joke for you. But the Timberwolf was all but extinct at one time, I believe, but came back in droves. We have a wolf population that is starting to come back in Minnesota, not because it was stocked and brought back by our DNR, but naturally came back. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't it be within the realm of reason that wolves could come back in Texas? Is that beyond reason, or?
It's not beyond reason, okay. actually. And I'm glad you asked that question, because we do see some precedent for that. And it's also in the book, but we have these hybrid mixtures that started popping up down in Galveston a few years back, which I like to refer to as the Galveston wolves, because it just makes it easy for me to remember what they are. But they're a mixture of coyotes and Mexican red wolves and domestic dogs. Mm-hmm. Well, we also have the Texas terror dog, or the artist formerly known as the Texas chupacabra, that contains some of that same DNA mixture based on what we know. Obviously, we don't know that every specimen fits the same genetic profile. But we do see precedent right now, as you and I are sitting here talking, for wild wolf DNA showing up, you know, in the ecosystem in Texas again. And to answer the first part of your question, they were hunted and extirpated because they posed a threat. Mm. You know, many people today still live out in the country, in the wilderness out here. They're ranchers, they're farmers, you know, they're not surrounded by people. So wolves are dangerous, I think. We've kind of forgotten as a society, and as maybe even a human species, just how dangerous wild animals are. Hmm. And wolves are, they'll eat you, man.
Oh, yeah,
they're
yeah.
mean. You read about these stories all the time of people having encountered them in the wild. And if they survived, they didn't do too well.
Right.
If you look back at human history, wolves posed a threat to us all throughout our development, all throughout our establishment of society, all across the world. We have so many stories out of Europe. There's a very good book called, it's a very long title, but it's about the Beast of Gévaudan, and it's called Beast, and then it has a subtitle. Great book. But it's got a whole listing of all these instances where wolves were plaguing, you know, villages and settlements, and it was such a big deal. So many people were killed, so much livestock was lost, that they kept record of it. And, you know, now we can say, okay, well, maybe this led to some of the legends of werewolves, or maybe they were werewolves, but that's, you know, that's kind of going beyond your question.
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, it sets up things very nicely. I guess I asked that question to lead into some other things we're going to get into here. And that is, there's a fine line of delineation. Like I was pointing out earlier, there's the difference between what's native to the ecosystem and then what is kind of outside of that ecosystem and what could be paranormal. And it being that wolves aren't natural to that ecosystem, and then all of a sudden you have what you've set up here with this West Texas Dogman triangle, which is, I mean, it truly is fascinating that you've had these different attacks over, what, 100, 150 years. And they're all unusual, all strange, and the different cases are unique in that you have not only eyewitness accounts, but right up in their face, you know, not just mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I saw it from a few hundred yards and it was unusual, but
yeah, I mean, some of these are up close daytime sightings. Some of these are sightings through a window from a few feet away. I'm sorry to cut you off, but
go ahead.
Yeah.
I can only relate it to one story. As I'm sitting here reading the book, and as I'm going through story after story after story, and getting up close and personal with these stories, I can only tell you one story that only comes close. That I got chills reading some of the stories, hearing about howls, you know, and mm-hmm. seeing these eyes and eye shine and things like that. And I go back to the weekend that my stepdad passed away. And I went down to the farm where my mom and stepdad were. And all kinds of weird things were happening the weekend he passed away. Doors were opening on their own. It was almost like he was trying to say, he had believed, I'll give you just a brief summary here, Aaron. He had believed that when he passed away, he'd be scattered to the four winds. That his spirit would be there and you'd see him in different things. But, you know, he didn't really believe he'd be around. And I think kind of what happened was all of a sudden he was around and he went, oh, wait a minute, I got to let you know I'm around. So he was doing things like opening doors and lights were flickering and just little ways of going, hey, guys, I'm here. Well, I'm actually sitting on the porch, and this is back when Darkness Radio was on radio, and I'm listening to the show, and I'm listening to Dave say, well, Tim's not going to be in tonight. His stepdad's passed away. We just want to wish him all the best. And as he's talking about my stepdad, I'm sitting out on the porch, and this is in southern Minnesota. And I hear all around me, I hear, they don't have wolves down there, but they have like little coyotes. And they all start to howl at one time. And it's a group, and I got chills on the back of my neck, and it sounded almost like a chorus of what had to have been more than 10. So I hear this chorus of these howls, and then it was like it kind of rose up and it held it there for about 30 seconds, and then all of a sudden it all just as Dave kind of went on and talked on the air, he started to mention stuff like that, and he was mentioning things about my stepdad Leroy, and then he stopped talking about him, and they all stopped at once, and it was dead silent. There was nothing in the background, no wildlife, no crickets, because there were a lot of crickets that were chirping that night, but no crickets, no nothing. And I just sat there, and I listened to the silence. And the lights had stopped flickering on the porch and all that other stuff, because the lights were flickering on the porch before the coyotes started to howl. They started crying and howling like they were crying, and then boom, they stopped. And that was the last of the activity that weekend. And it was so weird.
Interesting.
Yeah. But before they started howling, I saw all these little eyes out in the distance. And I was like, oh, what the hell is going on here? Like, it was really weird. And I get the hair raising up on my arms as I talk about it now. But so as I go through this book and I see things about eye shine and howling, and I think, okay, to me, that was kind of a supernatural experience having to do with somebody passing away. When I read this and I hear about somebody seeing something large looming in the foreground, and animals being scared, and I go, okay, this is something totally different than what I had. What I had kind of seemed like a 15 coyote salute, for lack of a better term, of somebody who had passed away. Mm-hmm. What you're describing is somebody waiting for dinner. You know that.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that you say that because this is a tough part of this for me, because you have stories that are very much like the one you described that are, that seem to be supernatural in nature. And they're very often accompanied by these howls, these bestial just noises that terrify people, or at the very least leave a very long lasting impression on them, you know, such that they come out later. Mm-hmm. But then we have all these other stories where, like you said, it seems to be an animal. It seems to be something that's stalking or hunting prey that wants to avoid being seen. But in both of these cases with these stories, we have the same physical descriptions and we have the same responses in the witnesses. And very often we have the howls that just don't quite seem to fit. So, you know, I've been asked, what do you think these things are? I don't know.
Yeah.
Some of these cases seem to be spiritual and or spectral and or supernatural, and some of them don't. So it's interesting. Like you said, very interesting.
Well, let's get into what these things are, because one of the experts that you talk to a lot in the book, someone I think we both respect quite a bit, Lyle Blackburn, has a differing opinion than a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people that you talk to or that you refer back to in this book seem to say very clearly dogma, that they believe this is dogman. And it's based on tracks. It's based on different evidence that people have found. The eye shine, the build, the snout, the ears, different things that even the, you know, just the hulking build and the fact that it's a slimmer build that they're seeing. But what Lyle Blackburn says differs. And why don't you tell us what it is that Lyle Blackburn says and why he thinks it's different and who he thinks it is.
So Lyle has looked into this stuff, obviously, for many, many years, and his take was incredibly valuable because it challenges my perspective. Mm-hmm. Lyle, and I'm trying to remember our exact conversation because it was a year and a half ago.
Sure.
Lyle also was tremendously helpful during this entire book. He wrote the foreword. He agreed to be interviewed. Awesome dude, obviously. But he... based on some of our conversations, seems to adopt more of the spectral idea that this is some kind of a perhaps ghostly entity. His own story about a potential dogman encounter took place at night at a graveyard. It's also in the book, which I'm super hyped about.
Yeah.
So that gives me pause as well, because when I look at guys like Lyle, who I respect and admire tremendously, who I was a fan of 2 years ago and never thought I'd meet, never mind get to work with, you know, and they've been immersed in this stuff for so long, I have to stop and go, okay, but Lyle can't be wrong.
Yeah,
but all these reports can't be wrong either. And I don't think it's about right or wrong. I think it's that these things are, as far as we're aware right now, undefinable. They don't quite fit into reality as we understand it, whether they are spectral or whether they are animals. So that was kind of a way of dancing around the question, but it's just a tough one. It's a tough one.
Isn't he more of a mind that he thinks that it might potentially be Sasquatch as well?
That was another thing that came up. Yes. And that I got also from Michael Mays, Texas cryptid hunter, North American Wood Ape Conservancy author, educator. Awesome. Awesome dude. He also kind of posited that it's very possible that these are misidentified Sasquatch sightings. That was something else that Lyle and I took discussed. And I think there's definitely a lot of room for that. I would be very surprised if every dogman encounter is dogman and is not Sasquatch. Being a person that believes both of these things exist at some capacity, I can work with that. That works for me. But one thing Mr. Mays said in the book is that it's hard enough for a lot of people to accept that there could be one, you know, giant hairy creature out there, i.e. Sasquatch. Never mind two, and never mind one that we see in Hollywood movies all the time.
Yeah.
So that's a hard thing, I think, for people to wrap their heads around. But when we have these recurring patterns in appearance, behavior by the witnesses, geographical locations that are significant to folk tales that have the same descriptions, to me, Sasquatch doesn't fit all of that. It doesn't fit into that profile, if that makes sense.
Very much so. And just the difference, I guess, like you have been pointing out, just the difference between build. I think it might have even a little bit shorter height. A lot of the different witnesses are saying things like, well, maybe between, you know, 6 and 7 feet. You do get some that say between 7 and 9 feet. But you get,
and we've had a couple out of Sam Houston, where they talk about them being 10 to 11 feet. And that's the first place I've heard that they were that large.
Right.
that I can recall. And then you get into a whole nother segment of questions like, okay, if they're animals, why are they bigger in Sam Houston? Well, it's more uncharted space. There's more food. They're less likely to be opposed. Okay, I can work with that. Or is it that there's so much high strangeness energy in the Sam Houston National Forest, which I personally believe it is, much more research is needed out there, that these spectral entities have more to work with and they can manifest themselves in larger forms. I don't know.
Indeed. Okay. So when we come back, Aaron, I have an interesting question to pose to you. Now, much like in the Sasquatch community, you have apers, you have those who believe that maybe Sasquatch is more of a dimensional being. We're going to pose that question when it comes to Dogman, and if that same question applies, and then we're going to throw some other alien questions at you as well when it comes to Dogman. That's coming up here shortly. The book is the book is a very interesting one, and is put out by Small Town Monsters, and you're going to want to get it right now. We actually have a link in the description of this program to go get that book right now. The name of the book is The Texas Dogman Triangle, and it's available right now by our guest, Aaron Deese. By all means, go get it right now, folks, during the break. When we come back, more with Aaron Deese, and we'll talk about Dogman and if Dogman has alien ties or not. That's coming up right next, right here on the Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Our guest is Aaron Deese. The book is The Texas Dogman Triangle, and we are talking about all the strangeness and high strangeness that has to do with the Texas Dogman. One of those things of high strangeness might have to do with its cousin. I guess we can call it its cousin, Sasquatch or Bigfoot. And sure. One of the things the two may have something in common with is something that I learned from another guest, and that is in his area that he likes to call Monsterland. I won't name the guest, by the way, because that's the name of his book. He says that wherever you see a Bigfoot sighting in his area of the country, in the Northeast up there in Connecticut, and you'll see a UFO not very far behind. Like, you'll see Sasquatch, and if you look up, there's a flying saucer, almost always. Not far behind, Aaron. Not far behind at all. So It's almost like these things are coming through a dimensional portal. Maybe they're stepping through. Maybe Sasquatch is stepping through. So my question to you, Aaron, is does Dogman have some sort of an alien counterpart, or is Dogman some sort of a dimensional creature?
Maybe. Okay. Is the answer to both questions. I've read reports of them walking into portals, disappearing, you know, things that we associate with spectral beings. Like, you hear about the, oh yeah, Bigfoot walked into a portal, along those same lines. I've read reports of them engaging in firefights with U.S. military personnel. There's a story that has kind of been floating around in the Dogman community for a couple of years that was relayed to me by another researcher. It's not in the book because it's not in Texas, but that's what these things are doing. They're extraterrestrials in nature. They get out of their craft, they're covered in body armor, and they open fire with laser guns. Really cool, fun, awesome stuff. I'm really glad it hasn't happened in Texas because it would be really hard to sell. And by, you know what I mean? By sell, like to frame in a way that seems logical. And
right.
You know, I think that's important. Not to say it can't happen. Like, hey, we don't know. The universe is vast and we are small, but we don't seem to see that in Texas. Now, I don't have every story. I don't have every report. Since the book went up for pre-order, not even since it came out, I've had three other people come to me and go, I wish I knew you were working on this because I had a sighting like this, you know? Oh. So there's a lot. I'm really excited about that. That's just in the last few days. There's a lot out there that we just don't know about the Dogman question in Texas at this moment. I have researched UFO sightings in Texas. I may have had one of my own, maybe not. I don't know. I obviously have researched Dogman sightings in Texas. I haven't made an attempt to cross-reference or correlate them. So now I'm thinking maybe I should.
You know, what Well, first of all, I got to throw a comment in there. First of all, if you did have dog men from space that came down, I got to think Texas is the last place they want to land because you guys are fully armed and ready.
We have a lot of guns here. Yeah, this is yeah. You don't have to own a gun to be very, very close to one at all times.
That's right. Yeah, that's the last place dog men want to land. You know, I mean, you know, that's a mistake in itself. But it would seem to me that and not only that, but military bases. You've got military bases everywhere in Texas.
Yes. So we have three in San Antonio. Yeah.
So again, wrong move. You know, that's the second point. Yeah. So two big points. Dog men probably aren't real safe when it comes to Texas. Yeah. If they want to try and land en masse from a spaceship with body armor, they're probably not getting very far. I want to bring up an interesting locale. It's right away in the book, and it's one that's it's a very strange place, a place where there are a lot of people that come up missing as it is. I mean, if you haven't had an incursion with Dog Man, you've probably turned up missing there, and it's been part of the Missing 411 series for quite a while. Mm-hmm. That's Lake Travis.
Lake Travis.
A lot of people are familiar with it. Some people are not familiar with it, but it has gotten a lot of a lot of attention in the Missing 411 series. There have been UFO sightings in Lake Travis. It was a very, how should I put this? It was given a lot of attention on the Colin Cowherd show and podcast. There's a very famous quarterback who is now, last year he was with the LA Rams. He was with the Cleveland Browns at one time.
Mr. Mayfield. Mr. Baker Mayfield. Mm-hmm. He is mentioned in the book. I did attempt to interview him, but I was not able to reach him. So, Mr. Mayfield, if you're listening, I'd really like to talk to you.
Well, yeah, if he's listening, let's get him over to you. And I think he might have gotten a little shell-shocked after Colin Cowherd went after him. I think he was more than willing to come out and talk about it. He certainly was very loud about
his experience. He got on Twitter pretty much the same day, he and his wife. And they said, we saw this large, glowing, lit object moving downwards towards the water. And Lake Travis is huge. It's a reservoir of the Colorado River. It's been around since the early 1900s. And it's very, very low right now because we've had historic lows for rain in Texas the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. But when it's at full capacity, there's a lot of space down there. A lot.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off again.
No. By all means. I'm looking for your input here on Lake Travis.
Very strange place.
Very strange place. And I think when it came to Baker, I think he was ready to come out to the world and talk about his experience there at Lake Travis. And then when Colin Cowherd came out and got the sports community behind him, the meatheads and the jocks, so to speak. I used to be one. I get it. But when the meatheads and the jocks came out and said, "Oh, come on, Baker, you take one too many hits to the head."
Yeah,
that was it. I think that kind of reeled him back.
But the problem with that argument is that this is in a place where we've had other UFO sightings. There's photographs of other UFO sightings in the Lake Travis area. There are Bigfoot sightings out there. It's on the BFRO map. We even had our own sea monster back in the 60s. I will go ahead and say this. That was probably something that people imagined because the reports were coming out of the nudist beach, which still exists to this day, which is known as Hippie Hollow. So,
okay.
We can guess as to what people might have been doing there that caused them to see a sea monster coming out of the water. But everything else you've mentioned, yes, ghosts, potential dogman encounters, Bigfoot sightings, UFOs, all of that is very disappearances. A lot of people have gone missing in Lake Travis. And I'm always hesitant to take that and equate it to paranormal phenomena because people go missing, and these are people's lives, their families are still around. So I'm always hesitant. I don't want to be ghoulish about that stuff. But when you put it on the map alongside all this other weird phenomena, you can't ignore that. You can't ignore that it's all happening at the same place. Yeah. Lake Travis is an area that is not talked about a lot in the 4TN community right now.
Yep.
And I was really excited to be able to draw attention to it in the book. I actually lived not on the lake, but on the street that runs parallel to the lake while I was writing this book. So that's really? Another aspect of it that hits pretty close to home for me. Yeah.
Okay. So you do get the 411 on a lot of stuff that happens there locally. So you know what goes on there.
I hear some stuff. Yeah. Okay. I have friends that live in the area who will call me like, "Hey, I saw something weird," or my friend saw something weird. And, I had a friend call me one night who lives in that area. I was like, dude, I'm looking at this strange light that's hovering over the university. There's a Catholic university over in that area. And I happened to live close by. So I grabbed my binoculars. I grabbed my audio recorder, drove all the way down there. Turned out it was Jupiter.
Oh, well, yeah.
It was Jupiter. But, you know, it's cool that people will call you and be like, hey, I'm looking at this thing. You know, that's a neat feeling.
That is a neat feeling. I got to ask you, though, Aaron, honestly, I know you want to be respectful of the people who have lost people in Lake Travis, in the Lake Travis area. I do have to ask you this question, though. After having seen the work that's been done with the missing 411 stuff and the different evidence that's been brought up, I have to ask you about percentages. And what percentage of the people that have gone missing, and I'm just using generalities here. I'm not talking about specific cases. What percentage of the people that have gone missing in Lake Travis do you believe that foul play has been done due to, let's call it, human error, human doings, and human behavior? And what part of that is due to paranormal doings, paranormal behavior, paranormal happenings?
That's a great question. I don't think that's disrespectful at all. I think that, and personally, I think that's a really good question.
Okay.
And in a lot of these cases, when you dig into them, they have found bodies. They have found submerged corpses or folks have washed up on shore. Water is dangerous. Water sports are very dangerous. You're on a jet ski, you bump your head and fall off. You may never be seen again. And again, the lake is very deep. It runs into a major waterway that runs all the way through Austin and continues, you know, out of the state. So even if we don't find bodies, there's a lot of room for them to just be missing. However, it's not the biggest body of water in the world. You know, we do have a lot of people out there. We have police and stuff. So when bodies aren't found, that's where I think we can stop a little bit and go, okay, look at all this other paranormal phenomena. Look at all this other strangeness. And now these people have gone missing. That's, I think, where it really becomes a line of inquiry for us. So personally, based on the reports I've read, my research, I'd say about 50-50. We can explain and say, yeah, we did eventually find this person or we did find these people. And some of these stories of people going missing, we can't necessarily find primary sources for. We have articles that mention them. But where are the original newspaper articles? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't mean to hit it too skeptically because in general, I'm a believer in most of this stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. About 50-50.
I think that's fair. I mean, you know, there's always foul play and there's always things to consider on the human side, but there's a lot of strange stuff going on there. I mean, more strange than normal.
Yeah. Why this many people in this space? You know, why in this corner of Austin? Because if you look at Austin on a map, Lake Travis sits in the northwest area. And it's not this massive, it's not Loch Ness, you know, it's not one of the Great Lakes. So why this many people in that area?
It's most definitely strange indeed. Strange indeed.
There's even one little thing I should have mentioned before. There's even a place in Lake Travis called Devil's Hollow. So then we go back to, what about places that are named spooky things like the Devil's Bridge or the Devil's Gorge? You know, a whole nother line of inquiry. But yeah.
Speaking of places like that, you have a small chapter in the book about bridges and a couple of different bridges. Mm-hmm. Let's cross that bridge while we're here, if you don't mind the pun.
Yeah. I love puns, man. I'm a dad. I love puns.
dad humor.
There's a lot of paranormal lore associated with iron bridges. And there are a lot of other cases that kind of toe the line between spectral paranormal folklore and cryptid cases. Mm-hmm. Here in Texas, the Alton Goatman Bridge, which I got the chance to visit with the Small Town Monsters crew when we were filming Dogman Triangle, Werewolves in the Lone Star State, which is the documentary based on the book with Shannon LeGros. Very excited about that. Mm-hmm. But really, really cool place. The Alton Goatman is very notorious in paranormal circles. About 20 minutes from, depending on traffic, where I'm sitting right now, mm-hmm. is the Donkey Lady Bridge of Old Applewhite Road. And then we have an encounter in the book in Sanger, Texas, of one of these things on 2 feet, just walking across this iron bridge. And the original iron bridge kind of narrowed it down to two potential locations based on the description in the story, which was originally recorded by Linda Godfrey in Real Wolfmen of America, I believe is the title.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about this interview and not pulling up all my facts right now, but she was the first one to write this down. And there's not really a whole lot else out there about it. So in researching that case, that's out of Sanger, Texas, my role was more like taking what Linda had recorded and then looking at maps and using my own familiarity with the area. Cause I lived in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for a while. So I know the space fairly well. And I was able to kind of get it down to where like, okay, it's probably one of these two bridges. And both bridges still exist, but have been replaced by modern concrete structures. They just picked them up and moved them over and set them down on the road. So those bridges are still there. And if that energy is there, was there, perhaps it remains to this day. But we see this again and again and again, not just in, you know, necessarily dogman cases, but with paranormal entities in general. The Popelick monster, you know, yeah. Another goat man.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought there.
I forgot where I was going. I got so excited. But yes, nobody's asked me about the bridge thing yet. And all the interviews I've, you know, all the people I've talked to about this. So I'm quite excited. I think that's another aspect that's really underexamined is these old iron bridges, these crossings of water, which, you know, have so much mythology and folklore tied to them. Yeah.
Not just with like say dogmen or that, but also with ghosts too. I mean, you see that out east. You see a lot of things having to do with spirits. I mean, in these iron bridges as well. And it fascinates me I believe it was John Zaffis who said, you want to trap a spirit or bind a spirit, you throw something into running water, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So why is it, if you have a bridge over water, that energy is so prevalent in that bridge, but you throw something into running water and it binds it?
Right? Like, is it trapped there? Is it tied some? Maybe this, because there's so much to do with, you know, not even just bridges, but iron in general, looking at, you know, the lore having to do with the djinn and the fae, just as for two examples. Is there something that has to do with water crossing in one direction and iron crossing in another that binds these things to that space? I don't know, man. Oh, that's such a cool question. Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that because that got my juices flowing a little bit too when I read that part in the book. The other thing that tied into that I really wanted to ask you about is as I go through the book and I start to read, you have a lot of the same rock there in Texas that we do here in Minnesota. That's limestone.
Limestone everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that I didn't read into. I don't think I fully appreciated, you know, in terms of paranormal activity when I was writing the book. But then when we were talking to people for the film, Shannon LeGros, one of the first things she said was like, well, don't you guys have a ton of limestone here? You know, and I was like, oh my God, of course, this is why you bring in Shannon LeGros, mm-hmm. you know, because she knows mm-hmm. everything. But every place you go, yes, limestone everywhere, limestone rocks just laying around. I've found just on the ground in Texas, something like a couple hundred fae stones, which are rock or hagstones, a lot of people call them that, which are rocks with holes in them. And they have all, you know, some folklore mythology tied to them as well. But most of the ones I've found are limestone. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to ask what may be an obvious question, but maybe it's not. And that would be when you take and you line up the 700 miles of the triangle and you look at it, is there more of a concentration of limestone in the areas where you have reported dogman sightings?
So the triangle is actually much bigger now, and I should have said that at the beginning.
Okay. Sure.
The original triangle was that 700 square miles, and then the more I looked into it, the more stories I read, it grew. So the triangle, as the book defines it, is Dallas-Fort Worth mm-hmm. at its northernmost point, and then Houston and San Antonio on the two bottom corners.
Okay.
And then we have reports outside of that area. We have some reports that are maybe not necessarily inside of those places in a straight line, but they're, you know, 10, 15, 20 miles in another direction.
Sure.
So the triangle itself is much, much larger now.
Okay.
The original 700 square miles, yes, absolutely, because we have a lot of between Lampasas and the Johnson City area and going over to Fredericksburg, which is kind of where the original one was. A lot of ridges and outcroppings, a lot of wooded spaces, a lot of undeveloped areas, and all pretty much all of Texas was underwater, you know, several million years ago. So all of our rock here, you know, it's all oceanic. We find a lot of fossils. We find a lot of fossilized stuff. I've got a fossilized sea urchin on my shelf in there that I just found on the ground one day.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it's pretty cool. You'll find just like little seashells that are obviously millions of years old. It's pretty cool. Just in the middle of the woods, nowhere near the water. So,
oh, wow. Wow.
Neat stuff, which is one of the reasons I think we have so many hagstones and facestones down here, because they were all, you know, oceanic. So in that original triangle, yeah, a lot of limestone. Blowing it out over the entire state, still a lot, but I wouldn't be able to give you a percentage.
Sure. I was talking to a buddy of mine today who grew up in Arkansas, because one of the chapters of the book talks about hellhounds and black dogs. And one of the sightings is closer to East Texas or Arkansas, the Texas Arkansas area. And he's familiar with Beast of Boggy Creek, of course. And that was one of the things his mom used to talk to him about a lot when he was growing up. And so I texted him today and I said, hey, brother, I'm having on Aaron Deese tonight. And we're talking about lots of stuff. And I said, I know you've heard of certain things, but have you ever had a hellhound encounter? He said, oh, God, no. Never would want to have one. That's for sure. But he said, no, yeah. I've never seen one, never had one, never would want one. Tell us a little bit about hellhounds and black dogs and how prevalent the phenomena is in that area of Texas.
That's one that, you know, I'll be honest, if I stop and think about it, those things probably scare me more than dog man. Because if I see an upright walking animal, I know something is wrong right away. Mm-hmm. But by all accounts, hellhounds and black dogs are they look like normal dogs at first. And there are several stories that come out of Texas. My favorite, and the one that's based the most in history and reality, is the Campeche Devil Dogs, which allegedly the pirate Jean Lafitte, who was a real guy, he existed. Mm-hmm. His house, Maison Rouge, still exists in Galveston. There's a picture of it in the book. Mm-hmm. And the rumor goes that he, you know, brought over these giant, massive dogs or wolves. Some of the stories I've read, what did they say? Irish black wolves or something like that. Something real interesting. And he got with a voodoo priestess and had them endowed with supernatural abilities. And they would patrol the grounds of Maison Rouge, which at one time was like an elaborate mansion fortress. He had a little village there. Jean Lafitte, you got to look that guy up. If anyone listening, if you're not familiar with him, amazing guy. Not like in a good way. He was a pirate, but just a very interesting guy. Eventually he was asked by the U.S. government to leave Galveston. They're like, get out of here. Just leave. You're a pirate. So he sailed to Yucatan. And he apparently left behind these devil dogs. Now, if these dogs existed in Galveston, these wolves, and they were some kind of a, you know, mix of wolves and dogs that we haven't heard of yet, maybe these are the ancestors of the Galveston wolves that we see today. Maybe. But the rumor goes that visitors and even residents of Galveston will smell, you know, just a foul odor of a wet dog, or they'll hear these disembodied growls, or they'll see, you know, like a big dog with glowing red eyes. So that becomes this whole other thing. Is this tied to the dogman phenomena? You know, because they're one of the beliefs about black dogs is that they're bad omens. You know, they're letting you know something terrible is going to happen. We see that a lot in mythology as well. These dogman sightings leave people with a sense of fear and dread and anxiety. So is there something there? Is there a correlation? I don't know. I don't know. But the black dog thing, man, it's spooky stuff. Because if those things exist, that's definitely more, I think, in the spectral realm. You know, I don't see reports that take these ghost dogs and fit them into the zoological order, at least not that I've encountered, you know.
Right. And then as you get further into the book and you start talking about different types of wolves that are out there and you can't explain what genome they are, and then you mix in hellhounds, which may be purely spectral, and you wonder what kind of supernatural soup you've put together here. And what creates dogman? What is dogman? Then, you know, you let the imagination wander and you wonder what kind of physical thing has happened and what exactly are you dealing with? You know?
Yeah.
Is it truly a canine, or is it some sort of other dimensional creature? You don't quite know at that point.
Yeah. And my approach in the book was, you know, primarily looking at these things as cryptozoological phenomena, unclassified animals, you know. my wife is a veterinary technician. And so I run all this stuff by her, and I was really fortunate to have her perspective to kind of filter through some of this stuff. Like, well, you know, Sarah, look at this report. Look at what this person said. Okay, that's weird, but dogs do that. I've seen a dog do that. You know, I've seen a dog walk on two legs, or I've heard a dog howl in a way that was so bestial and terrifying that like it bothered me later that day, because animals are capable of making horrific noises, you know, when they're in pain or when they're scared. Right. So having her perspective was very, very helpful. But even that wasn't enough to go, okay, but then definitely all of these are dogs. You know, so the majority of what we seem to see in Texas, and the way I approached it, is looking at these things as potentially unclassified animals, hybrids, perhaps. That's a theory I'm very fond of, because again, we see precedent for that all over the place.
But even if you sit Sarah down and say, well, Sarah, okay, if you take everything out of the mix, and if you just want to look at height, weight, and build, how many dogs get to be that big?
Right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, there's probably two actual types of dogs that get to be maybe somewhat big.
Yeah, like if we're looking at an Irish Wolfhound or a Grand Pyrenees or a Great Dane, or even some mixtures of, like, you know, Husky, German Shepherd, Belgian Malinois, wolf dogs are a thing, and they're very, very large.
Yeah.
If you saw one of those stand up on two legs, you go, oh my gosh, I'm looking at a werewolf. I've never seen a Great Dane walk on two legs.
No, no.
You know, I say that dogs can walk on two legs, and we do see that, but usually, what I've seen, we see that in smaller breeds. We see that in little guys that don't have as much weight.
Yeah.
They can hop around. You know, my brother-in-law has a Pomeranian that does that. Cutest little thing in the world. But every time he stands up, I'm like, there's a small werewolf. So if we can find some examples of Great Danes and Irish Wolfhounds walking around on two legs, that's great. That's great. Maybe we've answered this question.
Yeah.
But I haven't found them yet.
No, no. I can't see Scooby-Doo jumping up on two legs and hoofing it across a field after, especially after a deer for dinner. I can't see it happening.
Yeah. So, is it a giant Pomeranian, since Pomeranians can do that? Well, that's also pretty weird. So, like, even if we are talking about a known species that's adapted to a new behavior, that's still cryptozoology in my mind. That's still a study of an unclassified aspect of the zoological kingdom. And there may be others that disagree with me, you know, but I feel very strongly that what we're looking at here, there is a spiritual and a spectral element to it, but I do believe there's also a biological element. I don't know what the relationship between those things is. It seems like there is one, but I don't know. I don't know what it is.
you find a giant Pomeranian that can take off like that, you got a dog that'll win Westminster. I'll tell you that, my friend.
That's like a Pomeranian you could ride like a horse.
Yes. That dog's coming in first place, and you can tell everybody else to go home. That's for sure. I mean, you know, that's not a Pomeranian. That's a Pomeranian.
Dogman solved. We can all go home. You guys don't have to read the book. We figured it out. No, please, right. Please do read it. It was a lot of work.
Yeah. Still buy the book. I mean, you know, Aaron and Sarah have to eat. I mean, come on. That's all there is to
it. We do. And this is just like a fun personal aside, but I set up everything with Small Town Monsters to write the book, and then a month later we found out we were having a baby. So you know, this whole process, my wife she did so much to make this possible. Like, it never would have happened without her, because she was getting ready for a baby while I was writing a book. So
fun thing
I like to mention.
It is a fun thing to mention, that's for sure. On the section with Sasquatch, you have an interesting story about, if we can go into it just a little bit, about the Bear King of Marble Falls.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk?
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about that story?
Yeah. And that's one that I kind of was on the fence about including. And in fact, it's not on the encounters map as a part. Well, no, it is. Sorry. I did decide to include it. It almost didn't make it onto the encounters map as a Dogman sighting, because it runs right down the center of Sasquatch and Bigfoot versus Dogman and or werewolf activity. The description seems to be of an ape-like creature with a canine-like face, you know. So then, it's a canine-looking Sasquatch. We figured it out. We know what it is. Anyway, the story is that this thing was wandering the wilderness. It lived in an area known as the Moon Mountains. There is a place called Moon Mountain, about 70 miles from where this story would have taken place. So Maybe. I don't know. But it came out of the woods and it kidnapped this young lady. And story doesn't seem to specify how old she was, but probably younger, probably in her teens, early 20s, kidnapped her. She wasn't found. The townspeople all got together and rallied and, you know, went hunting and tried to find her. And the next morning she was found kind of just wandering around aimlessly. I like this story because the damsel in distress rescues herself. Yeah. I think it's a really cool story for that reason alone. Very yes. empowering.
Yes.
I think. But she tells them, like, yeah, this thing came and it took me to the Moon Mountains and it wouldn't let me leave. And I guess it didn't hurt her, but it just would not allow her to leave. Mm-hmm. And at some point she managed to escape when it either, you know, went to sleep or went off hunting or whatever. Again, the details are kind of sketchy. But she led everybody back to the place where this thing took her. It came out of this cave, charged at the assemblage, and they gunned it down. There are a couple of problems with this. One, I can't find a newspaper article for it. Two, if you had a body of some unidentified animal, I feel like you would have written a little more about it. What happened to the corpse? We don't know. But then again, where did the story come from? It started somewhere. So whether it was a Sasquatch or a dogman, you know, I don't think we can say, okay, well, this one was just a wolf. Wolves would have been around at that point in time. Wolves don't pick people up and carry them away.
Right.
They don't possess the biology for that. So, right. You know, that's kind of one of those where we have to stop and go, okay, this could be a Sasquatch case. This could be a dogman case. Maybe there's some relation to both. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's one that I really, really love because it's one of the older stories. And Marble Falls is just north of Austin. It's just, oh goodness. I hope I get this right. It's just west of, Round Rock, and we have a Bigfoot legend out of there, the Hairy Man of Round Rock. It's just north of Lake Travis, which you and I have already discussed.
Yep.
And it's smack dab in the middle of the triangle. So I had to include it, but it is kind of one of those cases that's like sort of a strange balance between Sasquatch and canine-like entities. Yeah.
Now, one of the things you mentioned in the book, which is not necessarily, we won't call it by what it's known as, but we'll call it by the name you call it in the book, which I find an interesting name. I'll let you tell people what the name is. Chupacabra.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's mm-hmm. been given a new name in Texas because it's not really Chupacabra as we know it. And I want you to describe to people, Aaron, why it's been renamed. Not you haven't renamed it, but it's been renamed by some other people mm-hmm. in the community. And why it's been renamed, what it's been renamed, and why it's been renamed this, because we typically know Chupacabra as a goat sucker and not as a typical dog per se, or a dog-like mm-hmm. creature. Mm-hmm. It has a different shape to it when you're talking about South America countries. It has more of a cryptid type shape. Mm-hmm. But in Texas, it looks more like a hyena or a dog, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Okay. And the name that's kind of been adopted is the Texas Terror Dog. And I have to shout out my friend Kenzie Gleason at Manic Pixie Dream Ghouls, the Crypto Chats podcast, for suggesting that we rename this thing in the first place. The campaign was Paranormality Magazine when I was over there. We did that. And the name Texas Terror Dog was Joss and Monique Rose over at Fright Life Paranormal. But it was a whole group of people, you know, the Cryptozoology Club through Bigfoot Society, Cryptocasters, you know, a whole group of people got involved and voted and came up with these names. And Texas Terror Dog is where we landed. And I took it and ran with it. I asked Seth Breedlove, Lyle Blackburn, David Weatherly, all the Small Town Monsters people, basically anybody who would talk to me for 5 minutes. I asked them, what do you think about this name? And the response was generally pretty good. Christina Downs of the Texas Folklore Society, I was fortunate enough to interview her for the book. She also seemed to think that was pretty cool. And one thing she said, which is also in the book, is that there have been reports of these things in Texas for generations. Like, this is not a new thing. We just started calling it the Chupacabra in the early 2000s. But in Texas, we have this, again, canine hybrid, which is a mixture of domestic dogs, coyotes, and Mexican red wolves, which very often seem to have sarcoptic mange. They either have very little hair to no hair at all. The big thing between the Texas Terror Dog and the original Chupacabra is that we actually have taxidermied specimens of the Texas Terror Dog. We have DNA on file. UC Berkeley and the University of Texas, if I'm not mistaken, analyze DNA. And that's why we know these things are dogs, coyote, wolf mixtures. So they're cryptids because they were a new animal we hadn't seen before. And I think that's part of why it captured everyone's imagination the way it did. And but you had the chupacabra sightings out of Puerto Rico just within the last 15, 20 years when these things started popping up and gaining prevalence. And then some people sold a whole lot of t-shirts. They made a lot of money.
Yes.
I don't fault them for that. No. I don't fault them for that. No. Because life is crazy. And if you find a monster, make a t-shirt. That's great. But even Lauren Coleman said in an interview with National Geographic that we kind of missed an opportunity here to really study and classify and get excited. And I'm paraphrasing Mr. Coleman, but to really get excited about a new cryptid, a new species that we can actually document. We have all this video and these photos and all this evidence. And we threw it in the same line as something that we have no idea what it is. We have no clue. It fits nowhere within our zoological lexicon. So Texas Pterodog makes more sense.
So be sure to pick up Aaron Deese's Texas Pterodog t-shirts coming to smalltownmonsters.com. You'll be able to get them for $20 a piece.
You know, we hadn't talked about that, but I'm going to pitch that as soon as you and I are done talking. I'm going to send a message to Seth and Heather and be like, hey.
I'm throwing money right your way. It's for the kids.
Tim gave me a great idea. We're going to have to cut him in on this. I don't want to get sued.
But. No. Yeah, it's all yours. It's for the kid. I'm telling you. It's for the kid.
Thank you.
Texas Pterodog t-shirts. That's right. I've been tinkled on by a Texas Pterodog. That's what you put on the back.
Oh, I like that.
See?
There you go.
That's what you put on the back.
That's a bumper sticker.
And then you have the kid in his diaper peeing on a Texas Pterodog right on his little head, and the dog going like this.
There we go.
That's a $1 million idea right there, Aaron. Just say
it is. Yeah. You just bought me a house. Thank you.
See, there you go. Well, make sure the kid gets a playroom and a bedroom. That's all I'm asking. A playroom
Absolutely.
And a bedroom. So there you go.
Absolutely.
There you go. So that's interesting that there's a whole nother genome of chupacabra that exists just in Texas. I mean, that's, you know, that's just a cool thing. So folks, I'm not kidding. You better go look for this t-shirt over at smalltownmonsters.com.
It's coming. I'll sell it on Etsy if nothing else.
That's right. So look for Aaron's t-shirt. That's coming out soon. So I have to ask, how rare is a Sasquatch sighting compared to Dogman and this Texas Pterodog? I mean, or what's the percentages here?
So to quote percentage, if I try to quote percentages, I will get it wrong.
Okay.
But if you look at like the BFRO map, for example, mm-hmm. Texas is thick with Sasquatch. Okay. It's everywhere. You know, of course, the Boggy Creek Monster is just over the border. It's just mm-hmm. up the way there.
Yeah.
So the further north you go, the more sightings you see reported. In these same areas, we're seeing dogman activity. There's definitely some overlap and some parallel there. So then we go down this road of, you know, okay, well, are these dogman sightings being reported as Bigfoot sightings? Because, you know, like Mr. Mays said, that's kind of easier for people to stomach. Like, I think you're more likely to hear someone say, I saw a Bigfoot, maybe, versus I think I saw a werewolf. You know, you're just more likely to get that. So I think if someone did see one of these things and they weren't aware that Dogman was a thing, it wasn't something they had ever heard of. They didn't want to be seen as completely crazy, but they still wanted to share their story. And I don't think the people that report these things are crazy. That's just the bias we're fighting against.
Yeah.
You know, I think they would be more likely to report it as a Sasquatch sighting. But when I talked to Jody Cook over at the North American Dogman Research Project, you know, he said, I went back and started looking at some of these early Sasquatch sightings I looked at in the 80s and 90s. And these people were seeing Dogman. They just didn't know what to call it. Uh-huh. So that's a tough question. It would probably require somebody to go back and look at every single one of these encounters and start looking for these physical descriptions and commonalities and stuff like that. I did some of that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I read every single BFRO report from sure. Texas because I did not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that'd be impossible. Yeah.
But because there's a lot. There's a whole lot.
Right. Right.
So that's one of those things that I think there's room for that, but more research is needed.
Yeah. I'm just curious, you know, if you're sitting in front of these reports, and I'm not expecting you to do this. This isn't homework, Aaron. But if you're sitting there and you're reading rancher reports or farmer reports about cattle or livestock that have been attacked, and they've been on the scene when they've been attacked, whether it be daylight or nighttime. And they've either filed a report with police or they haven't, and they've tried to defend something off or fend them off themselves, what their impression would be at the time. So if you look back 100 years, 50 years, 25 years now, and what their interpretation is based on social bias at the time and what they think it is at the time.
That's huge.
Yeah, huge. So, you know, coyote, wolf, Sasquatch, whatever they think it may be, and then try to figure out based on the time that it is what we may think it is, because as we are right now, you have what, three or four potential suspects that it could be at any given time right now in that triangle that you're talking about. You're talking about it could be a Texas Terror Dog, it could be, you know, it could be Sasquatch, or it could be a Dogman, right?
The Texas Terror Dog, we're fortunate in that those guys are really little. And this is mentioned in the book too. I'm really glad you brought this up. I very, very seriously considered taking Texas Terror Dog reports and either putting them on the same map or a secondary map to kind of cross-reference and say, let's look at some of the crossovers here. But the Terror Dogs are so small. They're not large creatures. They don't terrify people to the point of like, I don't want to go in the woods anymore. These dogman encounters, they seem to start at 6 feet and go up from there, kind of like we were talking about earlier.
Okay.
And I do think, like you said, we need to account for what people were thinking at the time, what was in their mind, what are the social biases. And when we start seeing these reports referred to more as wolfman or werewolf reports, because the ones going back to the 50s and 60s, dogman's not in there. That wasn't a term at the time. Mm-hmm. They were described as wolfmen, man-wolves, you know, things like that. That's about the time that a lot of werewolf movies were gaining popularity. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the Lon Chaney movie that kind of kicked everything off. And then you mentioned El Santo earlier. You know, right. Mexico put out a ton of werewolf movies in the 50s, a whole bunch. Yep. A lot of really great stuff came out of Mexico during that time. So were people watching these movies? Well, yeah, we know that. Were these people living in the hill country, kind of out in the middle of nowhere, were they watching those movies? I don't know. To me, that might be a little less likely. But that's when we see these descriptions popping up as wolfmen or dogmen.
Kind of wrapping things up here, Aaron, I got to ask you this. This is kind of, we're playing fantasy cryptozoologist here, I guess, is the best way to put this. Fantasy cryptozoology. So you've talked to a lot of people when it comes to putting this book together, and a lot of people that you admire, of course. So we're going to play, fantasy cryptid team here.
If you have to
go out in the field, let's say you have to put together a team of three with yourself, okay, and you're called out on a case, fresh case, you have a rancher that has had reported attacks and multiple attacks on, let's say he has, I know you probably don't have this in Texas, but you have, we'll go herd of cattle, we'll go multiple head of cattle, probably 400 or 500 head of cattle, and they keep getting attacked night after night, okay, within multiple weeks. And you have to assemble three others besides yourself, okay? Mm. And he knows, he keeps saying, I see, you know, it's a huge creature. It's got to be at least 7 to 8 feet tall. It's hairy. It's got a snout, yellowish, reddish eye shine. I've taken shots at it. I know I hit this sumbitch, but it keeps coming back, and I can't put it down. I don't know what it is. I want somebody to come out and take a look for me. I've got cameras up everywhere, but the images I get, here, I'll send you the images, but the images aren't clear. You're not getting clear images on the camera. They want you to come out for yourself and take a look. What three cryptozoologists do you pick to take with you to investigate on this ranch/farm?
This is a tough one because, like you said, I talked to a lot of people about this book, and I have a lot of friends in that field. So I'm gonna. Can I go living or dead? Is that okay?
Sure. Well, let's go living or dead. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So living or dead, I'm gonna keep it with my San Antonio team just because they would be the easiest to rally and get moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. So Rod Nichols, Bexar County Bigfoot, right here in San Antonio. indispensable resource talking to him during the book. He provided so much throughout the process, at the beginning and right at the very, very end. He was sending me canine footprints from the San Antonio area. So Rod Nichols, Bexar County Bigfoot, Mr. Ken Gerhard, also based out of San Antonio.
Good choice.
Ken is a cryptozoologist, but he also knows so much about, you know, science and animals in general. He's a docent at the San Antonio Zoo. Yep. Not to say that other cryptozoologists don't, but anytime I talk to Ken, you know, his scientific take on this stuff is so refreshing and poignant. So, and then Tom Slick, also San Antonio, not born here, but made his legacy here.
Yep.
Founded the Southwest Research Institute. He financed all of Peter Burns' expeditions into the Pacific Northwest. He went to Loch Ness. He financed expeditions into Sumatra. He went to Canada looking for Bigfoot. He traveled all over the world and spent millions of dollars because he believed that this stuff was worth looking into. And if you don't know much about Tom Slick, you got to look into that guy, man, because we wouldn't be having this conversation without him. So those are the three: Mr. Slick, may he rest in peace; Mr. Gerhard, and Mr. Nichols. Yeah,
excellent.
No offense to anybody name, because this was a really, really tough question. But that the San Antonio crew would be easy to mobilize if Tom Slick were still alive.
It's an excellent list. It's a good list. Yeah, excellent. I kind of like those what if scenarios.
And I think if it was a significant enough case, I think I could get Rod and Ken to come along if they're available. Slick would be a little more difficult. But,
oh, I think you could. If you had a significant case like that where a rancher had a lot of cattle being taken out night after night after night, and he had actually put buckshot into this thing and hadn't moved it, I think you could get Ken and Rod in a heartbeat.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. They'd want to see for themselves.
So. That's a fun one. I like hypotheticals.
Yeah. Hypotheticals are always fun to play. The book is available right now. We have a link for it in the description of this program. It's called The Texas Dogman Triangle. It's available via Small Town Monsters Press. And by the way, the new T-shirt will be available as well. There it is right there. There's the book right there. The new T-shirt will be available as well. And you got to get that as well, because the kid's got to have a playroom and a bedroom in the new house. So
he does. And as of this week, I am a full-time stay-at-home dad and author. So you support authors.
That's right.
Or we might quit. Just kidding. I'm not
or we might quit. And if they quit, you don't get movies. So that's all there is to it. Yeah.
If you guys don't buy my book, I swear to God. No, I am so excited to take people on this journey with me. Like, I've always wanted to do this as a job. Like, since I was a little kid, I wanted to write books. So probably the last 30 years of my life. So this is definitely a dream come true for me. But more than that, I want people to go on this journey. I want them to read the book, see what they think, watch the film, because the film, I had pretty much finished the book. So to get the whole story, you know, to really see everything, I think you need to check out both. If I can self-promote a little bit.
Absolutely. Please do. The film, where can they check out the film? Please let them know.
Yeah. So it will be screening, making its debut at Monster Fest in Canton, Ohio next weekend. And I'll be there. I'm very, very excited about that. Shannon will be there. The whole production crew will be there. So that's going to be super cool. Just getting everybody together and being able to share it with people for the first time. And then it will debut worldwide sometime after that. I'm not sure exactly when, but soon. You have time to read the book before the movie comes out, but not a ton of time from what I understand.
Will there be an announcement on smalltownmonsters.com?
Yes. Watch Small Town Monsters, wherever you get your internet information, Facebook, Instagram, smalltownmonsters.com, of course. Okay. You will pay a little bit less for the book if you order it from Small Town Monsters versus a third party. That's just a little PSA there.
And that's where we're linked up to on the link that you click on this description. So yep, you'll go right to the cheapest link, which is right to smalltownmonsters.com. So you can get that discount there.
Awesome.
Yeah. See, we're saving you a little bit of money. We're taking you right to the source so you can get it right from the source. So
we've got your back.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly. So support Aaron and Sarah. And by the way, go get that. I know Aaron's going to have this T-shirt up before this even hits your grubby little hands, this podcast. He works.
I'm booting up Canva as soon as we're done. Yeah.
There you go. I tinkled on the I forget what the name of the monster is. The Texas,
Texas Terror Dog.
The Texas Terror Dog. That's what it was. And
there's a terrible dog that lives in Texas.
That's right. So that'll be that. Aaron, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you. Want to thank Aaron Deese for being on the program tonight. Again, the name of the book is The Texas Dogman Triangle. It's available by Small Town Monsters Publishing. Go out and get a copy of that book. And again, I enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed this book. I want you to check out the book and enjoy it yourself as well. Want to thank you so much for tuning in for another great week of Darkness Radio. I want to thank Beer City Bruiser for being with me this week. I want to thank Mally Fox and Jessica Freeberg as well. I want to thank our sponsors this week. I want to thank HelloFresh, and I want to thank Manscaped for being on board with us this week. I also want to take a moment to recognize a couple of things, if I can, before we take off today. I got a note from Kevin, who says that his best friend's dad was just diagnosed with stage 2 lung cancer. He's almost 70 years old, and he needs a prayer and healing request. So Bill from Circleville, Ohio, needs your prayers, he needs your energy, and he needs your thoughts. If you're not into the whole prayer and energy thing, if you could just give a thought for Bill out there who has stage 2 lung cancer and is going through a bit of a tough time right now. As you're going into your Memorial Day weekend, if you can just give some energy or prayers or a quick thought for healing for Bill from Circleville, Ohio, with stage 2 cancer, lung cancer. We'd appreciate that. So, Bill, you are on my mind. You're in my thoughts and my prayers, Bill, as we go into this Memorial Day weekend. Also, again, it is Memorial Day weekend. Remember to treat the holiday with the respect it deserves. I know we're all probably going to be getting together with friends and family, and you're probably going to be having that cookout or, you know, enjoying yourself, which is fine. But keep the spirit of the holiday for which it's intended, if you would, please. And again, that's just from somebody who comes from a family of service, which is for people who have fallen in the line of duty. Folks, I also want to, again, I've thanked you once already. I want to thank you again for listening to this program, and want to just remind you real quick, I know you love to binge this program. If you could, just do us a small favor. Try to binge it in shorter bits. If you could binge it maybe once every couple of weeks instead of binging it once a month or whatever it is you're binging it in. If you could try to listen to it once a week, if you could take your three programs and binge it, you know, during the week, that'd be great. It helps us in Audio Boom much, much better if you're listening to the programs more frequently. Reason being is that it counts towards our totals as far as advertising goes and getting advertisers and keeping them. If you are listening to this program more often, if you're holding on to the programs, like say for a month or two at a time and then listening to them all at one time, it does nothing for our download totals. In fact, it hurts us. So if you want to help out your buddies here at Darkness Radio, well, listen to us a little more frequently. That's all we ask. So if you could do that for us, we'd love you even more. Well, we love you as it is, but we'd love you even more. In fact, you can be our best friends. I don't know what that means, but that's what it means. Next week, we got huge, huge programs for you folks. I'm not gonna tease you or tell you. I'm just going to let you find out. Maybe we'll publish it on our social media. By the way, if you're not subscribing to us on social media, you should. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and we're on Instagram, and soon to be on TikTok. Actually, we do have TikTok channels, but we're pretty bad at posting. But we'll get better at it, we promise. Again, have a great week and a great weekend. It's an extended weekend, so enjoy family, enjoy friends, and be safe. Overall, don't drink and drive. Don't get polluted and drive, overall. And come back to us safe next week. We have a great week of shows lined up for you. And just enjoy the weekend and help somebody out who maybe is having a tough time out there. Do it for your friends here at Darkness Radio. We'll see you next week for the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.